Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear, listen.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again by my lovely co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Lovely, boy! I will not tolerate this insubordination for much longer. You are speaking to Rear Admiral Weirdington Esquire! And I have resolved to take a more dignified and manful title for myself this week, because I have to admit some failing. I believe that a more dignified personage would be more appropriate to address the fact that I feel that I really dropped the ball last week in giving my thanks to whatever anonymous person out there sent me a Ko-fi. The amount was way greater than there was an additional zero on there that I didn't see the first time, and I wanted to really appreciate, express my gratitude to the person out there who ensured that kept my belly full for this month.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like that's super cool. I didn't know they actually gave you that much. That's super cool. So yeah, thanks, anonymous donator. For keeping Weird alive, so we can keep this podcast afloat. Since God knows I couldn't keep it running by myself. So yeah, hi folks again, we're joined once again, episode whatever, I forget which one it is, but we're on chapter 52, so I suppose we should just jump right in, because I got lots of shit going on this chapter, so...
Start with the summary of this chapter.
Yeah. Hold up. First of all, you need to explain what happened last week.
It's not that I'm, you know, another clone or anything. A previous Weirdington Esquire has been killed and replaced once again by a newer, more vindictive model. Okay. So the goddess is now basically the Great Gazoo.
Yes,
is now like not only is regularly in contact with Blackjack's brain cancer. Rampage has decided this week to be useless, which like in a better context would be really funny. Would be a pretty good gag, but in this case, it's just kind of emphasizes how like poorly drawn everyone is. That like the like joke about Black Rampage at this point would be that she is a very old lady who is very much over all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Rampage is several dozen different characters, and I don't mean and that's not even referring to the multiple personality thing. They stop by a hoofed waffen base. Blackjack surrenders all of her weapons. We get a bunch of exposition that I don't remember going anywhere or even setting up anything. Exposition about like how a world that we're not in works, how a completely different setting works. And I'm starting to think this whole thing would be better if instead of a story, like, I wish Somber just had a Tumblr where he could like post about his like lore entries and like just write a RPG setting book. Somber, it's where you would be happier. We would all be happier. And then some sort of high muckety muck does a surprise visit to the base. The people that she's talking to insist that she leave immediately without her weapons. To which both Fi and I respond, like, or at least I sort of indignantly responded that, like, I don't know. I wish Blackjack were a character. I wish, like, Blackjack, like,
had
had some sort of consistent personality, because, like, if she did, like, from my understanding of what you like about the character, like if she were to have any character at all, and a really wonderful correct response, and it would have been real fun and action packed too, would be no, I don't think you understand the terms of the negotiation here. I could kill everyone I can see in this room with just my bare hands, because they're robotic bare hands. They extend into. If you want me to leave quietly without incident, you will return my shit. I'll be happy to do it. I'll oblige you in exchange for my shit. Otherwise, a lot of you are gonna die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the only excuse that I can really buy about her, like, not wanting to do that is the backbeat of her, like, trying to be a better person, which is a cop-out anyways, but it's the only thing I can think of, like, well, I don't want to kill all these people who've done nothing to me. And it's like, well, they're still fucking Sky Nazis, so whatever, but, like...
Who've been poisoning people, and, like, there's
yeah.
There's no amount,
The VC are established as being, like, ignorant patsies, basically, to this whole thing. Like, they don't know that the food is, like, poisoned at all, like, with, like, well, like, it's a, like, what is, like, inviralized? Like, what is the word for when you, like, infect something with a virus?
Nothing's coming immediately to mind, but poisoned is, I think, a catch-all.
Yeah, regardless, they don't know that they're doing that, and won't listen to Blackjack because, like, they're all incompetent morons, I guess, basically. I don't know.
I mean, that's on them. Like, that's, yeah, like...
I know. There's a bizarre, like, just thinking about it for a quick second, there's a really bizarre side plot that went nowhere in this story, where, like, Glory was, like, trying to, like, understand the disease, and you'd think that she'd be able to be like, hey, here's all my research notes, motherfuckers. There's inalienable proof that the food you have is covered in this disease. Like, fuck off. But, like, no, that just doesn't happen. Because Glory isn't really a character most of the time. And she has no agency outside of being Blackjack's girlfriend. But just as another one of those things that comes to mind of, like, why did that just go nowhere?
Because we just needed to, like, provide information for the wiki article on Sombra's conception of what it's like in the Enclave. I can't wait for us to show up in the Enclave, do a big dumb shootout, and none of the mechanisms, none of the, like, machinery of politic that these entire chapters have been devoted to will matter even a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see going forwards.
Like it'd be one thing if it was, like, set, like, no, you don't understand, like, we're setting up the chessboard for, like, the big, like, crazy shenanigans, like, when we do Invader Dib, and, like, once we're up there in Enclave land, all of this exposition will be worth it, because we won't have to, like, go over it again once we're in the thick, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's... A lot of the Road to Thunderhead 2020 is, like, really, like, just kind of a big mess, because it's just so much, like, dragging your heels to get to the thing that we're supposed to be getting to. You know, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory? But I guess we should jump into this chapter, which, like, chapter 52, reunions. This is going to be a weird thing for me to say, but I kind of like this chapter. I haven't had one of these in a while. So we'll have to see. It has, for the most part, it is really good, and then it doesn't stick the landing. It hits the ground at Mach speed and breaks all of its legs. But up until that point, when it's sailing through the air, oh boy, this chapter's been gravy. But yeah, so my epithet for this one is the shit goes nuts episode.
Okay.
It's not going to be quite off the wall like I think you're immediately expecting, since I've hyped up a lot of the, like, late tier stuff. That's not until book 5, where book 5 just goes, like, completely off the wall.
I mean, like, hit me. Like, I'm, like...
But yeah,
like,
so, we begin...
Don't be as somber. don't just hype it.
Yeah, don't just tease it. We start with, this is just after the party that happened last week, last chapter and last week, where Scotch got her cutie mark, so they had a big party for it. Her cutie mark is the Freemason symbol, basically. It's the, like, compass and square. I'm not sure if I went over that last week. So Scotch Illuminati confirmed. But it's just after sort of the party was, like, dying down, and, like, 21 goes up to BJ and is like, hey, well, you know, you kind of hovered around the party. You didn't even really participate. And BJ's like, well, I'm still kind of feeling mumpy, because she's still kind of, like, dealing with, like, a child dying a couple chapters back, and just her general blackjackedness being kind of, like, feeling sort of cursed and don't really want to touch people because of feeling, like, affecting their lives at this point too much. But they had BJ and 21 kind of have, like, a long conversation discussing, like, the thing that I've, like what I think I'll count against this chapter, which is the thing I'm very tired of, is that the story does the, like, dropping the mantle, like, part of the hero's journey, like, the moment of doubt, like, where, like, the hero, like, refuses the call, or not even, like, refuses the call, like the where the hero, like, doubts and questions themselves up to this point, and, you know, I'm Spider-Man no more, and throwing their costume into a garbage can or whatever. They deal with the idea of, like, okay, like, but what if we just quit, though? Like, BJ's like, you know, everyone seems to be happy and Chapel seems to be thriving, so why don't I just, like, quit and stop doing this stupid quest? Which, I mean, like, I agree with her.
Yeah, you know, that seems completely valid. Because there's better quests you could be having on top of that. Like, there's, like, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, I think, okay, I don't know. Does it even need to be noted that, like, the quest never had a point? Like, was never meaningful?
They mention in this one where they're, like, there's a mention about, like, one of, like, the project that, like, is kind of being activated by this Project Horizons, which the book is named after, is something really bad, and it's, like, ready to fire, which they found in some of Golden Blood's notes. So they don't know what it is, but it's some kind of, like, dangerous old world super weapon that, like, is ready to fire at any time, and that's kind of like a dangerous sort of Damocles to be hovering over the entirety of the Hoof. But they don't even really know where to go. Like, they know how to get to where they're, like, they know where to go, but they have no idea how to get there. Like, getting to Shadowbolt Tower, which is in the center of the core, may I remind you, meaning that, like, the only way to get to it is going through the Enclave, because there's just no way, like, the core is just suicide. So the only way they could do it is through the sky, and that's equally suicide. So there's just, like, there's a big, like, how do we even approach this incredibly insane...
Not to town is Tunnel 2.0. Is Microwave Hallway 2.0.
It's many microwave hallways. It's an entire labyrinth of microwave hallways.
And thematically, like...
Yeah.
implausibly, the only way to get to our destination is through this wildly dangerous gauntlet of sorrows. In a story with characters who, like, interact with their surroundings and have consistent motivations, like, this would be a blessing. Like, oh, two birds with one stone, you say? That we can stop the, like, genocide being conducted by the Hooftwaffen right now, and get to, like, find out more about this other, like, sort of Damocles that'll end us all at any moment.
Mm-hmm. But they talk about the idea, I guess I cut you off a little bit there.
No, it's all right, because I was about to come back to it, but the last thing I had to say was that, doesn't this conversation they bring up, like, well, if you retire, if you give up now, are you okay with the idea that essentially you're just deciding to make the best of your remaining time before the various, like, apocalypses that are brewing? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of
come to a boil.
That's kind of the vibe. Like, a lot of the crew outside of Blackjack are pretty much just, like, done, because, like, 21 has no reason to do anything. Gloria doesn't have any reason to do anything, really. The only person really, like, even remotely interested in doing this quest anymore is Blackjack. And, like, 21 just, like, they kind of have a conversation that, like, BJ like admits, like, I probably could give it up, but like 21 like remarks, but like it would also eat you up inside and destroy you. Like you can't like leave that hanging. You'd go through the rest of your life knowing that you could have figured it out if you just kept going. And I mean, like, from a cynical perspective, like, I agree with the idea that she should pick up the quest because the story would be over otherwise. I'm weirdly on the, like, I'm on 21's side to say, which is a weird sentence to say it by itself, to say that, like, no, you should pursue this. Even though this, like, aggressive curiosity streak doesn't really necessarily feel in character for Blackjack, for the most part, this is more of a little Pip thing that has kind of gotten stolen by Blackjack's character, that, like, they're obsessively curious.
I mean, I don't know who she is, except that she does the drugs and says the beep words.
Yes, and she has no idea. She has who the sex.
Blackjack is at this point. Like, I can't. Like, I think one of the problems I run into, like, trying to I think I've tentatively given up trying to, like, readapt this story into one that I would like more, because I have no idea who Blackjack is. I don't.
Yeah. I think that might have, some of that might also just be because of, like, my way of telling it is also kind of, like, because I haven't gone into every single time Blackjack has ever been inside her head, which I think, because this is a first-person story, is kind of important, but a lot of it is just retreading the same old ground, because the story is way too long. Like, it's way longer than it has any right to be. So there's only so many times you can essentially write the same plot point of main character has aggression issues and self-destructive impulses, and she's trying to get better about them, but she keeps failing. And, like, that story could be interesting. And I think to a certain degree, sometimes it is. The idea of, like, I've become a killer and a monster, but I don't want to be. But trying to do so, the waste won't let me, so I keep relapsing. But it's not really focused hard enough. Like, it's not, like, part of this problem is just the cast is too big. If this was a very smaller group of characters and was way more focused of a character study kind of thing, then the idea of, like, going in the introspection of a character who is, like, desperately trying to be a better person, circumstance and their own behavior constantly forces them to, like, keep making the same mistake over and over and over again, could be a really interesting story. If I had, like, notes of review to how to fit, like if this was just a script doctor how to fix this podcast kind of thing, my focus and attention would be primarily being on reducing the cast and making Blackjack not necessarily more of a character, because I think it's a bad angle to look at it, just going into more depth about her sense of isolation and her sense of, like, monstrousness and her bouts of cruelty mixed with her, like, attempts at empathy and how she seems to, like, fail at it constantly, and, like, why that kind of, like, that sort of, like, damned by fate sort of feeling is kind of, like, an interesting story to write about. You know, I'm trying to get out of the game, but they keep dragging me back in kind of story could be a really interesting, like, one to write about in this kind of apocalyptic setting.
Well, that scene done.
BJ, like, talks about how, like, she trusts her friends more than she trusts herself, and 21, like, admits that, like, well, maybe we're keeping something from you, because that was, like, a thing that had brought up in the previous chapters, and, like, BJ just goes, like, oh, yeah, no, I know you're hiding stuff from me, and I just, like, I've just been hoping that you've been hiding from me for the right reasons. I haven't wanted to deal with it up till now. I was talking with a friend of the podcast about how, like, this scene is super weird. Like, these scenes are super weird because, like, 21, like, apologizes for his actions and feels genuine in them. Like, so much of it, like, it should really go noted. So much of the dialogue in this particular chapter doesn't feel like it was written by Somber, because these characters are not insufferable about the way that they talk. Like, I've talked about multiple times about how, like, there is a dozen and a half speeches of Blackjack being told how great and special she is by another member of the cast, and they always feel, like, wildly inappropriate for the context and setting. But in this case, it just kind of feels like, hey, like, 21 is actually apologetic for doing a bad thing to BJ. And he hands her a memory orb because, of course, that's the only way we can exposit this story of his memories.
It's an apology gift. It's like
it's an apology orb. I knew this is the only way you would have wanted it. But yeah, it's like his memories of Ten Pony Tower and like the thing that they did. And then we just go through it for a little while, and it's like it's not terribly important. It can be summarized in like a single paragraph, which is just while BJ was still in a robo-coma, 21 and the doctors that operated her were like got into an argument about the idea that like the people who put her back together, which is the Twilight Society, like they feel owed something because they think that she might be a descendant of one of the Ministry mayors, and they want to like prove it by doing a test. And that test happened, and she failed it. And I spoiled it right away at the time that like it wasn't that she failed it; she is the descendant of Twilight Sparkle. It's just that 21 just rigged the test. So this is just further confirmation that happened. Like, it's, I don't know, like, it's one of those things where I don't really take it that hard because I don't really care that much anymore that, like, BJ is special, you know, you're a wizard, Harry. That's not what I really want to talk about this chapter anyways. Because I just wanted to get that out to get into the next part that I actually am excited to talk about. So, BJ learns Sorry?
Oh, okay. I don't want to like, leave you on pins and needles too long, so I'll do this as quick as possible. It strikes me as funny that the reason that had to happen, that dumb plot point had to happen, was because if Blackjack suddenly became important to the larger world and had access to the resources of this, like, ancient conspiracy society, with all of these resources to bring someone back from the fucking dead, then she would become important enough that she would damage the continuity of the original story.
Yeah.
And so it's funny to me in a grim, cruel way that for all Somber's efforts to top the previous story, to be better, greater than a repair of the previous story, he is enslaved by it.
Yes.
He is trapped helpless under its thumb, squirming like an insect.
Well,
he must remain ever in its shadow, always nipping at its heels.
Always biting at the roots of Yggdrasil, never being able to truly affect fate. Yeah, but like that's kind of just an unspoken rule about fan fiction, right? Of like you never utterly violate the canon of the project you're working on, because if you're going to deface a canon continuity that much, you might as well not even write it about that fandom in the first place. So it's not shocking to me that this is the way it is, that it's like I can't actually do anything to change the timeline. It's the going back in time and realizing that everything you've done to change the future is what made the future happen in the first place. You're trapped by your own actions. But anyways,
okay, so exciting part.
Yes, the part I want to talk about. It's a lot of, which is funny because it's a lot of just two characters talking, but I was still really excited about this sequence. Blackjack wakes up and she's like on a soggy bed. I think under chapel. I'm actually like not sure exactly where she is, but she wakes up and she's like, okay, I'm going to talk to 21 about this, and like wheels over and like realizes that like Dawn is also in the room because she wants to speak with her, and she's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll talk with you, and then like 21 like kind of like waves her off and says like, it's like, oh, you should talk to her. She seems like you two would really get along, and like you know, she might expand your horizons, and like. She thinks that partly that's code that like Dawn might know something about what's going on, so she humors her conversing. God, this is going to be a hard. It's going to be hard to explain like why I like this sequence so much, but we get like a weird, interesting kind of walking conversation. Like it's a very like efficient usage of writing, sort of thing where like they're sort of like. Wandering around the town and like various events are happening in the town of it being reconstructed and them slowly like leaving the town as they're talking. Well, they're sort of just discussing things. Like that's the kind of like thing that's happening right now. But Yeah, they talk. She talks with Dawn, and like we kind of like establish things that like you could kind of already surmise about Dawn already, where she's like she talks about her backstory, about how she was like a some kind of like tribal pony who was like a freak Pegasus, because that can just happen. You can just sometimes get Pegasi that just like are born to surface parents, and it just happens. And her whole tribe got wiped out, and she got saved by Big Daddy. And her and Big Daddy decided to form like a cool little gang of friends because she wanted to like help people in the wastes. And it's all this big ironic echo of like Blackjack circumstances, where she like forged a bunch of friends into a group that's trying to save the waste from itself, kind of thing. It's all really obvious kind of like parallels. Like the moment you see Dawn and the way she talks, it's really obvious what's going on. She's just what, like, she's the like failed Blackjack, like she's the previous generation's failed Blackjack, but she's a like soft-spoken mom about it, instead of Blackjack's like fighty drunk version. She also gives us like some tidbits about the hoof and its like importance in history that more gets added on to it. And this part made me roll my eyes, admittedly, where she's like, oh yeah, also like when Nightmare Moon was around and she was like she took over the world like 1,000 years ago, well actually it would have been 1,200 years ago by this timeline, she settled in the hoof and named it Lunaria, and I just like rolled my eyes about trying to make the city even more important than it already was, because like you gotta remember that like a former zebra civilization was here. It got blown up by a star. It was then like resettled, and then it was colonized by ponies, and then apparently it was made into a the ruling location of the setting Greatest Villains, and then it was like settled into a tech town afterwards that then caught fire. Like, so much dumb shit has happened to the hoof. It's actually silly. Like, realistically, when you actually like go
became the ruling capital of the setting's Greatest Villains and then a tech town, I don't, that seems to be the same thing happening twice.
Oh man, it's just really
but gentrification is shit.
Yeah, it's evil. It's actively pushing out poor people of the population and letting them starve on the street.
Only to create like what will soon be hollowed out shells once like it becomes economically infeasible to like maintain.
Like that's actually like a funny thing to think about. Like it's not really thought very well, I think, by the author of this. That's fascinating. Is that the thing that happened in the city is a thing that actually happened to multiple like real world cities, where it's like okay, it was like a centuries old all infrastructure and building and like all the housing was around the same like level, and then it all burnt down from a freak accident and was like rebuilt into like a tech paradise. But like the thing that doesn't, like the part of the equation that like the author doesn't think about that is that means that like the people who've been living in like 100-year-old buildings that are now on their ass like could not possibly afford to live in the hoof anymore. Like those people would just be gone. Like they would just be like homeless people out on the street.
Or refugees flooding into somewhere else.
Yep. Floating into like Ponyville or Baltimore or something like that. Yeah, I know the fucking city names, what of it. But yeah, we're learning like a lot about Dawn. Yeah, we learned that like she tells it in a really weird way, but like the way her group fell apart is they like became jaded about the waste and they stopped being friends. And she explains it that Sky Striker lifted her up into the sky into what she thought was a paradise. We know that like the group broke up because King Awesome wanted to fuck her and got friend zoned, and like that broke up the group. That's what broke up the band. Yeah, she flew up there and for a time thought it was like a paradise, until she like noticed the like, you know, she noticed all the dry rot in the walls, kind of thing, where it's like, oh, you guys are all Nazis. Fuck you guys. And like tried to like,
well, killed all the orphans because they're useless eaters.
She tried to do the things the like neoliberal way and like try to like rally a bunch of people and like to take it down from the inside of the system, and like that doesn't work, so it didn't. Which is shockingly politically aware for Somber. So instead she decided to like leave her family because she couldn't take like being in fucking Nazi Germany anymore. So she's just been all over the fucking place trying to find like hope. I was talking about this like last, I think like a couple chapters ago, where she's been like trying to find like hope of civilization, they could fix this basically, in some way. So she's like been to the Griffinlands and the Zebralands and all over the place and trying to find if there's anything out there, and trying to save people as she's been going along. They discuss about virtues again, which is a premise we haven't brought up in a really long time. Where she mentions that she thinks her virtue is salvation, because she just, you know, wants to save people. And BJ like ruminates again on what her virtue is, because like last time that we ever talked about virtues, she like thinks her virtue is death, essentially. Like she is euthanasia in pony form. The only mercy she can give is killing people that have like become broken or diseased.
Wow.
Yeah, that was in Stable at 9 when everyone was a zombie. She was like killing a bunch of them and like reading out like a fucking poem, but it was all pornified in her head, and like also thinking about how she was like, I have become death. Yeah, that was a whole thing that happened like fucking dozens and dozens of chapters ago.
Yeah, I remember it being kind of dumb at the time, but like actually,
it just really is dumb.
But this time, the phrase "useless eater" is
really
close
sticking
to mind.
In your brain. It's, well, like I mean, it, like she's
it's incredibly Malthusian. That like, yeah, no, it's a pretty eugenic notion of virtue.
Yeah, well, she is talking about how like she doesn't like, because a lot of this is like trying to figure out like what is Blackjack's like actual like positive trait. But yeah, they like make it all the way out in the city, and they're kind of like looking over the city, and there's kind of like a cool like, you know, there's a cool thing about them talking about the idea of like, you know, what hope can we find in the wasteland, while they're like with a visual theme of them like standing over top of this town of children that have managed to like cobble together like a small city now at this point with the help of Blackjack, which again is like a shocking amount of like restraint from Somber, that they don't just literally say that, we're just shown the observation and given the juxtaposition. But yeah, Dawn talks about how like, you know, being with Skystriker and her family and all that stuff, and like how like her family kind of made her want to like give up trying to like help people because she was happy, but she couldn't take being in Nazi Germany basically anymore. And in my notes I just put the other horseshoe drops finally, where Dawn like, you know, looks at her concernedly. Like I was talking about this before, but like because like Dawn is like anime mom, she like her eyes are always closed. So that just sounds really silly. It's just like, she stared at her intently with her eyes closed. I guess she squinted with her eyebrows. But yeah, the other horseshoe drops in a pretty fun way. Where they're talking about like, it's like, oh yeah, I would do anything to make the waste better if I can help it. And then like, Dawn's like, well that's funny. Like, then why don't you just, you know, hand the EC-1101 to the Harbingers? And like, BJ not being an idiot for once just like immediately makes the connection. Like, this isn't my daughter. She's actually like using her brain for once. She's like, oh no, I've been had, haven't I? Dawn makes a supervillain line where there's like, she's like, oh, you work with the Harbingers? And she goes, no, sweetie, I am the Harbingers. Which, like, in a more genre-savvy setting, like...
It'd be like, yeah.
Like, kind of like, funny. Oh, I'm the bad guy. But she like, insists that, like, they need EC-1101 to open the core, and also she name-drops specifically Project Horizons, which... she says something big, like no one knows what it is, but it's like catastrophic if it was ever to fire, and they need EC-1101 to protect us from it. And there's a kind of like, there is a really cool tension here where like, you know, there's this like, BJ is trying to like kind of get out of this the situation without like it being without it going nuclear, but Dawn like vamps for a bit. She talks about how like, you know, she went through all the whole wastes and tried to find hope, and she couldn't find any. She thought, like, everything was lost and all was doomed, and she was like, she like,
I guess time to form a doomsday cult about it.
Like okay, so it's not literally the case, but this just was really funny, the ironic echo here, where she's like, I was dead, dying of starvation and enervation, and I was deep underneath the city when I was saved. And like, I really wanted to just have been that she was in the microwave hallway. Like,
even better if, like, so, like, these, the, man, I just cannot summon it within me to, remember the names, this R word for the new bad guys.
The Harbingers?
Oh, right. I keep thinking that the Reclaimers is like, yeah, anyway, the Harbingers, only showed up recently, so, I don't know, I find it almost funny that, like, somehow something they did in the hallway, the microwave hallway, like, let her out of
it. That'd have been great. That's my new headcanon.
And so she came out of the microwave hallway at long, after 10,000 years, she's free, it's time to end the world. Also, it's kind of funny that, every member of, this initial team, went on to be, because the world is microscopic and like only great men of history can accomplish things, that every member of that original team went off to found their own sub organization, their own like entire section of the map.
Yes.
Except for one, the leader. But, dum-dum-dum, you thought this organization of people just came together out of mutual interests? You fool!
You buffoon! But, yeah, anyways, she was dying and lost underneath the city, and all hope was lost, and she crawling, microwaved, and sizzling, when an angelic figure came to her. Or an alicornic figure, I guess, came to her and said that, like, and saved her from her death, and now she like she formed this doomsday cult around the goddess of the core, she's convinced exists, named Cognitum, who is some like new threat, who she's some divine entity that's been like locked inside the core, and she has like very limited power and power and control, but the amount that she's been able to exert has all been like to like push Blackjack in the right direction, like when the city kept firing death lasers at various enemies she was fighting, that was Cognitum. But even BJ like kind of thinks to herself, it's like, yeah, but she also almost killed me multiple times, so like I don't really like have that much like gratefulness to her.
Oh, come on, Lavos is our friend.
God, this isn't even Lavos. This is dumber than that. There is kind of a great thing where, like, she's like, you know, you could just give me the EC-1101, and I can take it to my goddess, and we can save the waste from itself. Don't you want that? Don't you want peace? And Blackjack's like, no, fuck that. Are you crazy? Like, this character tried to kill me multiple times, and like, if she's who you say she is, she's also like directly and indirectly responsible for more or less all of the bad things that have happened in my life, one way or another. Like, she actually sits there and like runs down, like, she like traumatized Scotch by trying to eat her with a robot monster. She's almost killed me multiple times. She indirectly led to Stable 99 getting fucked over. Everything to do with Sanguine, and by extension, everything to do with Deos, everything to do with basically every other fucking thing that has happened in my life up to this point. When it's just like it's hard to explain how much I actually really, really like this scene, because it's Blackjack is like not just being defeated by the villain's superior ethos, which is a thing that keeps.
Oh yeah, normally the protagonists just lay down in the face of something like this. Like, well, okay.
And there's like a.
I guess that you really did own me with facts and reason on this one, so I guess I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
There's actually like a really like I wrote like a bunch of lines that actually like in this because I really like the dialogue is just really snappy in comparison to a lot of this. Like there's a bit where like Don's like, well, you know, well, I did like I was assured by Steel Rain that you would have just shot us and you wouldn't have you wouldn't even like negotiate with us. And he's like, you didn't even try. Like you just shot first and assumed that I would have never agreed with you in the first place. Like you've hurt so many people on the like because you thought I would respond badly to this.
Gee, I wonder why these assholes never got anywhere with their safe place play.
It's just a shocking amount of like blackjack making sense. And she's like, you know, and she brings up Steel Rain, and like Steel Rain is within the like is under the control of the Harbingers, and she's like, well, would it make you feel better if I just like if we just off Steel Rain and like in front of you as like a as a like that's like you're laughing, but that's just that's the way like she responds to it. It's like you made my like Steel Rain made my life hell. It's like, well, we can just kill him in front of you. Like if it means you'll give us the EC 1101, I'm willing to do anything. So they just
yeah, you are, aren't you?
Well, that's that the thing. To be the problem. That's the thing that Blackjack says.
Holy like, shit!
There's a bit where like because they walk up to the manor that's outside of the city because they're just kind of like trying to. BJ's trying to like herd them away from the city because she doesn't want to like the kids to get hurt. And Sturang shows up and she's like, you know, you can kill him right here. It's like I can just press a button with my giant comical hoof and he'll die. You know, we can just solve this right here and you can give me the program. And BJ's like, and she's like, oh, you want to do it yourself? Here, you have the button. She's like, no, are you crazy? Like, even the fact that you consider just killing a person off just to get the program just shows that you're willing to sacrifice anybody to get your way. And you're monsters. Like, there's a ridiculous, like, there's a couple of times that they kept trying to go like, well, Blackjack, you're also a monster. And she's like, and? Like, what's your point? Like, at least I'm aware of it.
What? Holy shit.
Like,
what? I'm thrown. I don't know.
Who is this person? There's this, one of my favorite parts of this, like, the part that I really want to talk about that's, like, my favorite, like, fucking burn by Blackjack is that, like, you know, like Dawn's starting to like get pretty tired of this, and she's starting to get fed up with all these like getting shot down. And she's like, "Well, you know, what would you have done? You know, wouldn't you have sacrificed everything to do this?" And she's like, "I don't know, maybe you could have just gave up." And she's like, "Gave up? Are you kidding me?" Like, just Dawn just completely loses composure over just Blackjack being like, "I don't know, you could have just quit." Like, I don't know, you seems like you've kind of done a lot of bad things to do this. But Dawn like reveals like. Some of her weirdness, where she like opens her eyes finally for the first time in the scene, and her eyes are all like terrifyingly green glowing, which would be a little bit more impactful if this also wasn't a thing that happened with Blackjack like dozens of chapters ago.
Yeah, no, like, and it wasn't significant in any way. It was just a random result on a mutation table. Like, oh, you got that too? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
I remember those days.
My eyes would be glowing too right now, but I don't have the robots, right? The robot eyes right now. And just, like, I would have loved if it was just like, and then she just taps her eyes and makes like the glass clinking noise. Dawn's like, okay, fine. If negotiations have failed, I guess we got to do it a plan B. And it's like, okay. And Blackjack's like, okay, so this is the part where you ambush me and then I kill all of you. And Dawn's like, oh, no, that's crazy. We're going to shoot a tank at Chapel. And the fucking, like, to, like, the tank that's been chasing him through the story just fucking rolls up in a chapel where everyone's just, like, sleeping, basically. And she's like, okay, you give us what we want, or chapel doesn't exist anymore. And BJ, like, calls this out, too, about, like, it's like, she's like, you know, we're gonna save the waste, we're gonna make it a better place, like, under Cogditem's rule, like, there will be no war, there'll be no strife, there'll be no suffering. And Blackjack's like, listen, if you're willing to kill an entire town full of sleeping children, you're clearly not on the right side of this.
Yeah, it sounds like none of those things will be because there won't be anyone.
Yes.
There won't be anybody to do those things.
And there's like a line that like it just fucking just Like I love that, that like does it's silly in this story, but I love this refutation where like Dawn's like, you don't understand, we have no choice, like, you know, it's we're desperate, we need this, and Blackjack's like, no, you always have a choice, like I don't accept that. And even when Dawn tries to bring up that like you've killed children, like how can you tell me this, and it's like, yeah, and that was bad. Like like I wouldn't have done it a second time. Like I learned from that. But yeah,
that was a gun to my head, who would have thunk it situation. This is like you were the one applying the gun.
Yeah, like it's one of the things, like just before we carry on, like the reason why I love this so much, I think, is because one of the things I find very frustrating, especially a lot in like action movies and especially superhero movies, is that a big weakness of a lot of them is that a lot of them fail to refute the main villain. And the only reason why I really bring up superhero movies is because they're very basic kind of stories. Yeah. Like, the hero is a hero because he does heroism. The bad guy is the bad guy because he does bad things. And the bad guy usually has some philosophy about, like, well, might makes right, or we have an overpopulation crisis, or some bullshit. And the hero goes, I don't believe that, and this is why, and then, like, shows us the reason why. Like, say what you want about the shitty fucking Raimi movies, but, like, a huge part about those is the idea that, like, people aren't just victims, they try to help Spider-Man in a couple of sequences, and that shit's great. And, like, so, like, why I love this scene so much is Dawn is, from a very, very basic sense, she is the dark Blackjack. She's not even, like, the evil, like, the anti-Blackjack, she's just, like, Blackjack a few years down the line. If you take the same kind of like myopic, brutal, violent thug that Blackjack essentially is at her core, and you take all the moralizing and the grandstanding that she has as well, and you just like extrapolate that to like a decade into the future, that's what Dawn is. Dawn is like someone who is far more jaded and done with the universe, but she papers it over with an arrogant, self-righteous sense of moralizing over it. Like, this is what has to be done because the only thing that can be done is atrocity. And the fact that, like, the protagonist just doesn't buy into it and just immediately, like, shuts that down at every turn is fucking great. That's good writing.
Yeah, yeah, to the point that I wonder who wrote this.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't sound like the somber we know.
Yeah.
None of this, like, he hasn't shown any sign of this kind of self-awareness. Like, this is clever. This is shit I want to see. Like,
yeah, this is shit I want to see too. I want to see way more of this kind of thing. But anyways, to actually get back into like what actually happens in this chapter, we don't have too much because we have a big sequence that is a little bit difficult to explain. But yeah, Blackjack, like, you know, they pull the pimp buck out of her arm, and there's like kind of that like there's all of those like kind of like dagger eyes like. Moments, and like it's like, you know, it's like they do like the reveal of like, oh, you've been transmitting this entire time, and Blackjack's like, no, I haven't, I don't know how that works, trying to play ignorant on it, but she's been transmitting like everything that they've been saying up to this point. And like the tank like swivels around because they're like, okay, you like they do this whole thing, and they're like, you also have to understand like why we have to kill you now, and Blackjack's like, whatever, I don't care, you said your piece. And like just as she's about to like get throttled by the main cannon of the tank, a giant explosion goes off, and we everything's white, and then the smoke clears, and like an anti-tank mine had apparently gone off on the tank, because, you know, remember 21 is good at explosives. So her friends are here, they've all showed up after, you know, BJ's made this big speech, my favorite bit of descriptive prose in this, just because it just sounds ridiculous and anime and badass, is like Dawn has like a moment of panic where she like goes to like kick up into the air to try and like do something, and she's immediately like shot out of the air like a bullet, described as a cyan bullet, because Glory does something in this fucking chapter for once.
Hooray!
Because Glory just like loses, she's all piss and vinegar because she just loses it on her fucking mother, like immediately showing up into the scene. And a lot of everything that's happening in this chapter, Glory and and Dawn are also like having a crazy sky battle, like a crazy dog fight, while everything else is going on, which is just nuts to me that it's happening. It took us a long time to get to this really stupid plot point, but the concept of that, like, Glory, the concept of, like, okay, Glory's been cursed to be Rainbow Dash, and that sucks, and, like, everything about it has been a massive hindrance, but, like, the massive boost to, like, all of her physical attributes being a massive boom in this moment is kind of cool, to be honest. I don't know, I'm a big sucker for I've been damned into this form, and even if it's silly, like, it is very silly that it's Rainbow Dash, but it's like, I've been damned into this form, but I can use it to, like, to protect the people I care about. That shit's great. But, like, there's, like, you know, and then, like, Lacuna bounces in, and they're like, yeah, that took us a while because they had, like, a lot of snipers trained on you the entire time. So that took us a while to, like, take them apart. So that's why we didn't just immediately, like, save you. There's a really comical scene that's kind of in the middle of this where, like, Steel Rain, who's, like, out of his armor, so he's pretty, like, neutered at the moment, is, like, trying to, like, get the pit buck. And there's, like, a kind of goofy scene where they're both, like, comically trying to slide the mud. Trying to catch this little piece of technology that's bouncing around. And then they're like, okay, we gotta get out of here. This tank is healing back up from that tank mine, because it's a magic tank. We don't have long before it's back in operation. We need to get out of here. And BJ's like, no, we need to kill this tank. Like, it's gonna be a danger, and it presents a huge amount of firepower. We need to kill it. So there's a kind of, like, nutso scene where they're like, dodging around a tank and tricking it into the manor that, like, they're hanging out in, so they could, like, have a little bit more leeway fighting it. So there is a kind of, like, this crazy scene of, like, Blackjack running into a manor and trying to, like, dodge around through, like, all these hallways as, like, a fucking several tons of metal is just bulldozing through the whole building. Anyway, I just gotta get the last page of my notes. We get kind of a weird scene for a little bit. Where, like, she evades the tank and it's looking for her, and, like, a bunch of, like, Enclave members just show up into the scene, because you remember, like, last chapter, like, they hung it with whatever, all the explosions, the tank going off, that stuff had, like, alerted the, like, nearby volunteer corps, and, like, Skystriker wanted to know what the fuck was going on, so he dragged, like, and because he's an authority, he just dragged a bunch of the, like, volunteer corps with him to go deal with this, so they're here to help as well. I have mixed feelings about presenting the idea that there is a good kind of Nazi and there's a good kind of...
I'm willing to wave it off like that JoJo did it.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable there, too.
But, yeah, so they're here to help. God. I just gotta figure out where I am. Yeah, they have a big slobber knocker.
Yeah, if I've had no complaints up to this point, so just to flex my complaining muscles a little bit... really, like, especially setting up the Enclave is what it is, like, it could have been an interesting, like, okay, the heroes are now more or less got this in hand, they're wrestling a tank, but otherwise, the momentum is very much on their side, and mm-hmm. then the Nazis show up to help.
The kind of help where at the last minute they're like, oh, and now we shoot you, and they have to, like...
Well, no, like, at the first minute, like, they're Nazis. Like, so, like, very American foreign policy kind of, like, when Nazis show up to help a, like, indigenous village, they're going to help it into the grave. They're going to kill absolutely everyone. instigators and victims alike.
Yes. It's hard to place when exactly this happens, but while they're fighting his tank... Caprice dies, which is another, like, negative point I'll make for this chapter, that, like, Caprice is killed, and I hate that the story does this problem where, like, former villains dying and their dying words being apologies to Blackjack about how awful they've been up to this point.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Is not
specifically to you,
and not all the other people I've hurt. But yeah, whatever, Caprice dies, so she's not in the story anymore. She's been slut-shamed into literal death at this point. Fucking... okay, I gotta remember the order of how this happens. So yeah, the Sky Nazis distract the tank for a while, and there's a kind of, like, quiet moment where, like, Skystriker... And, like, across the battlefield, like, Skystriker and Dawn see each other, and because they don't have, like... They don't, like, neither of them, like, know what's going on, because Skystriker just just showed up. He's like, oh, it's the person I've been in love with. Like, it's my wife. My wife is here. So he like immediately like runs up and embraces her, and Don does the same. And they have like a couple of like quiet words between each other. And Skystriker's like, oh, I can take you away from this. We can fly back up in the sky and pretend like none of this has ever happened. And like Don's like, oh, I can't do that. Like I have to save the waste from itself. And then a weird thing happens, which, please, you have to understand that this is cool, no matter how silly this is about to sound the way I'm describing it, because of the way that I've done this. But we get that like dramatic knife in the gut moment where this all goes wrong, but the way it happens is very silly, because like she opens her eyes and her eyes have got that like, you know, the eyes are glowing green. She has the black sclera thing going on, and she's like covered in scars, right? Because she's an old veteran at this point. All the scars start lighting up and like glowing the same green energy, and then like all her skin sloughs off as it burns away, revealing that she's a Terminator. Like just all of her meat just falls off and reveals that she's like again, it's very on the nose.
Specifically a Necron.
Yeah, like, she's a Necron. Yeah, she is literally a Necron.
Okay.
And she had, and her wings, like, because it, like, it, you know, it starts when she, like, opens, she unfurls her wings, and then, like, the feathers in the wings are actually, like, knives, essentially, and she just guts Skystriker, and, like, is like, no more weaknesses, like, I can't, like, I reject my humanity, Jojo. like it's important to remember this predates JoJo by a little bit, like at least being popular. So it's not a reference to that clearly, but
I mean it could be.
I mean it could, but I doubt it.
Yeah,
Sombra's a little too basic for that. But there is a moment where she does do the I reject my humanity moment. She has the last moment where she could like, you know, give this all up, and she guts her husband in front of her child. And turns into a giant flaming Necron, and it looks like she's gonna like face off the crew, but there's just too many of them right now, so she decides to cut her losses and just bail, which is a little like underwhelming, but like I don't know, like I don't, like there's already so much that's happened in this chapter that I don't think this chapter would have done well to have them also confront Dawn as well. So she just does the supervillain thing of like, haha, I've become powered up. I will fight you next time, Rangers, and flies away. but yeah, so that happens. And then Ghost in the Shell happens. So they decide, okay, well, whatever. Dawn's gone. The Harbingers have mostly been taken apart. His tank, we got to deal with it. So like the plan with the tank, and oh, I almost forgot a detail. Caprice, like, said something about the tank that's weird, and she didn't like get to all completely say it before her liver died. So they're like, okay, well, whatever. Something's going on with the tank. Blackjack, like, they like trap the tank, and Blackjack gets up on top of it, and she does the thing from the end of Ghost in the Shell where she like literally, like she hooks her her robo arms into the top of the tank and reefs on it so hard that it, like, pulls her cybernetic arms out of their sockets to reef the like seal on the tank open. But they get in it, and BJ like figures out like what Caprice was telling her, that like Deus is in the tank is what she figures out, and they're like, oh wait, no, Deus isn't in the tank. Deus is the tank, and they realize that like Deus back from the dead, his brain and his organs have been hooked up onto the inside of this tank. We find out eventually at some point that Caprice like sold all the part, like some of the parts that she had of Deus when he exploded, to the Harbingers, so that their town didn't get annihilated, and that didn't work anyways, but whatever. But yeah, so this is the scene I fucking hate out of this chapter, where this is where it doesn't stick the landing. So they like fight they go to fight the tank, and you know, Deus is like hurt, like about to like take out BJ because she's, you know, pull her arms off basically, and BJ's like, remember who you are. You're not a monster. I saw the memory orbs. You were tricked.
Oh, that's right. I'm a rapist. And then the dildo attachment comes out of the front of the...
God, yeah, the tank barrel, like, gets extra long and phallic-looking. But yeah, there's a shit... Like, because Somber is a terrible person and doesn't understand that, like, that he is expressing rape apologism by saying that Deus, as Doof, raped a woman, but it's okay because he was kind of autistic and was tricked by a different evil woman. That whole circumstances doesn't... Like, I don't care for it. Like, I don't give a shit that, like... The story goes out of its way to try and pretend that this is okay. It's not. Like, it's still rape apology. It's still saying that, like, he didn't ultimately do anything wrong because of, like, extenuous circumstances that I don't buy into. But we're just gonna... That's just how this gets him to calm down and give up. Because you, like... Because, like, so the thing we'll find out about Deus is that Deus speaks entirely out of, like, he can't talk. So his only way to, like, gesticulate is through, like, engine revving noises. So he makes the engine noise that is the sound of I quit. I guess. But yeah, so, and they give up, and BJ's like, yeah, we did it. We won something for once, even though Sky Striker's in critical condition and her arm's currently detached. Or they're currently pulled out of their sockets.
So, like, the lamest version of the Ghost in Shell scene, where she doesn't even, like, break into, like... The Ghost in Shell scene was cool because her entire back explodes, like... Her,
yes.
Like,
well, like,
and
like,
she,
like,
does, in fact, rip the lid off.
Yes. Like, that does happen. It's just that, like, it's... Whatever. It's to that scene. Like I remember someone, like, yeah, complaining about the scene once, and I didn't really care for it, and I still don't really give a shit that, like, it's a direct reference to a thing that's really, really good. So it's like, whatever. Like, it doesn't hurt the scene to be like, it's an homage to a different thing that happened that was a really good scene in a really good movie. Like, even still, that's the end of our chapter. Is they kind of just like, they're just like, yay, we did it, and like, oh, Blackjack, you really got to stop breaking yourself, and they kind of like, yeah, basically. But yeah, they managed to keep the EC-1101. They managed to stop the tank by convincing it's a real person.
Freeze frame on everybody laughing.
Yeah.
Slash dancing.
And then it turns into a weird watercolor single animation skill. But yeah, so that's it. That's the end of the chapter. I really, really liked this chapter.
Pretty good overall.
It might be just from contrast of a lot of the chapters previously have been very, very slow. But this chapter was very snappy. The dialogue is really, really strong. There's an establishment of a villain who I actually feel is significant because she's not immediately copped out by being really lame and because the story is upfront with her backstory. You have reasons to sympathize with her, but the story makes it clear, like, that this is a thing. This is important framing. The story makes it very clear that despite her having very similar circumstances and basically just being Blackjack from the future, that she has gone way off the deep end, and she is now making a bunch of excuses for her terrible behavior, and she has sold her soul to the devil, essentially. And that's great. Like, that's good writing for once. Like, it doesn't feel like a cop out. And like I talked about it before, I like Dawn a lot. Like, I like the idea of a character who is like it's very on the nose, and it's very transparent what Sombra is going for. If she is just evil Blackjack, like, to the point where she's such a Necron, for fuck's sakes, that works for me, because, like, whatever, it takes advantage of the fact that Blackjack is kind of a morally gray character, so it's very easy to see that, like, if you just extrapolate everything that's happened to Blackjack's life up to this point, that she easily could and probably will become a Necron, essentially. A hollow, soulless shell that serves a dark god for, you know, mysterious reasons. But I don't know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, just about everything about this chapter was great, except for the rape apology.
Yeah.
And even within that, like, it's, I don't know, it's dumb that there was enough of him to scrape together into.
They scooped him into a jar.
Like, whatever was left that they could put in a Ziploc bag was, yeah, so that was good, we talked the tank down. I think my only complaints are that, like, we didn't kill the Nazis also, that I think it would have been more appropriate if, like, the Nazis were like, good news, Nazis, bad news, Nazis.
Yeah.
That they're firing on everyone. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that happens to include the Harbingers. So, yeah. Like,
they're not on either
side. We
cleared
them away. And the Harbingers are the only ones with, like, sufficiently big weapons to, like, meaningfully threaten our heroes. And so, like, that their arrival gets rid of, like, the snipers with anti-tank munitions.
Yes.
But now we've got to, like, swat a bunch of Nazis out of the sky.
Uh-huh.
I think that would have been interesting.
Yeah, the story has the unfortunate opinion of that there is such a thing as a good enclaver that is still loyal to the enclave, which I don't think is really agreeable. Personally,
their politics would demand that, like, they start killing and keep killing.
Yeah.
I think that the scene with the tank would have been better if Blackjack, tore herself up to get inside of it, found a brain in a jar, had a conversation with the brain in the jar, and ultimately, like, the brain in the jar gave its consent for her to just literally pull the plug with her teeth.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, that would have been a much stronger thing. I think the unfortunate problem with it is that, like, Somber just isn't done with Deus quite yet, so he's going to be in the story for a little bit longer. Which, yeah, whatever. It's
oh, god damn it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's definitely a complaint.
Yeah. Like I said, it kind of, like, doesn't stick the landing, but I think everything else about this chapter has been great.
I think the only other remaining thing is that I worry that they'll try to say that Dawn was once a good person, when everything else, like, that we know about her, like, everything, like the best thing about this chapter is the, like, what I cynically suspect is the accidental implication that she was never good, that she was always a bastard, and that's, like, everything she did in this chapter, like, seems consistent with the kind of pieces of, like, the sort of person who would associate themselves with a murderer named who insists on being called Big Daddy and a murderer who insists on being called King Awesome.
Yeah,
like she was friends with Lord Humongous back in the she was in a book club with Lord Humongous and Immortan Joe.
Yes. Like, the thing, yeah, I think it's I think the perfect angle to really, really sell this character is if some sort of secondary character, like I don't know how we could glean this information. Maybe in a later chapter it would have been cool. Like, would be cool to establish that, like, because, you know, we learn that she started her journey in the wastes by her, like, entire tribe being killed, and, like, it could have been really cool to kind of establish that was, like, that was when hate was born in her heart. Like, that was when the good part of her died, and she never really recovered from that, and has just been using, like, a self-righteous sense of moralizing to, like, justify her cruelty to others, which is kind of what Blackjack kind of does. And she's gotten better about it in more recent chapters, but there's a huge chunk of the story where Blackjack commits cruelties to others, primarily on the face that she's in the right by being the good person about it. So it would have been really cool to have that kind of obvious parallel that, like, no, I was never good. I was always, I always had hate in my heart, and I just didn't know how to deal with it, and my way of dealing with it was pretending I was a good person.
Well, on that note, that brings me to another point of conversation. But first, is there anything better we could be doing right now?
I don't know. The only thing I've really been doing recently has been replaying Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which is, like, largely considered one of the best RPGs ever made, and I would definitely agree. Some of it's kind of aged a little poorly just by virtue of it being very, like, steeped in very 90s kind of stuff, because it's Vampire the Masquerade, and also you had to patch the shit out of it to even get it running. But it's kind of weird and shocking to play through a game that's so nakedly against liberalism as a concept. Like, it establishes the main guys you're working for are, like, an obvious pyramid scheme that has a lot of problems, and the only, like, and this goes so far, because I know the ending because I've played it before, but, like, that the ending's choosing the side of the established society is one of the bad endings. Like, the only way to win in that game is to refute society as established. And that's great. Also, you have to be a vampire, and that's cool. It's a very fun
game. Yeah, the Camarilla, like, I've become increasingly convinced over the years that in Vampire the Masquerade setting, the Camarilla is neoliberalism.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's amazing that other vampire, like people who are huge fans of vampire, like, don't seem to realize this, that, like, so what you're telling me is that around the same time that capitalism really got started, vampires came together in a conclave and they divided themselves up between a neoliberal new world order and a hyper zealous religious fascism, basically. The Masquerade, I think, is a perfect metaphor for sort of modern, up until fairly recently, when they realized that they've been getting cocky for the longest time in America, at least. Rich people have, like, kept it on the down low. Rather than, like, living in mansions, they live in, like, mm-hmm. cul-de-sacs of, like, gated subdivisions.
Yeah, we could talk about Vampire the Masquerade for basically forever, by the way, folks.
Yeah. The vampires hate Donald Trump because he's breaking the masquerade.
Yes.
Like, that's the only reason libs hate Donald Trump. It's not for any of his policies.
It's for masquerade violations.
Yes.
Anyways, is there anything you want to recommend?
Yeah, so getting back to what we were just talking about in the story, this chapter, funny enough, was really relevant to what else could we be doing? It's a documentary called The Act of Killing. And I would recommend you look it up, and just looking it up is enough, because there's a bunch of interviews and little mini documentaries about this documentary. Like, if you want to, like, see Werner Herzog talk about, like, how much of a fan he is of this film, it's out there on YouTube for you. It's very easy to find. But The Act of Killing is an amazing documentary, and I wanted to highlight it on this podcast because it really does, like, because one of the things that I keep complaining about, one of the things I most often complain about in this fiction is that it has "for matures only" on the spine, on the label, and it is so immature and childish and has, like, no conception of what is involved in the terrible acts that it, like, refers to. And is so up its own ass about. The Act of Killing is Joshua Oppenheimer goes to Indonesia and talks to the still living participants of the 1965 genocide, who are now public figures who now run the country.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of what if the Nazis won kind of scenario exists in Indonesia. And he went there and he did this insanely ballsy thing. He went to these people and said, "I want to make a movie about your rise to power. And I want to do reenactments of it." Mm-hmm. I want actual people who were there at the time to help walk us, the filmmakers, through what you did and how you did it.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds like a cool movie.
They agreed because they've been in power for 40 years.
They're untouchable.
It never occurred to them that, like, no one said word one about it. Like, no one's, like, no, of course no one's criticized them about it because they would die. So they had no conception that they'd done anything wrong. Watching them as they, like, talk about it and realize that, wait a minute.
Yeah, cognitive dissonance, the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what was that again, just for...
The Act of Killing.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I kind of just wanted to make sure that, like, people had gotten that. So yeah, so that's our episode, though. You can find us at Thou Art Fi. My Twitter is extremely not safe for work, so just keep that in mind. And I also yell about politics, and I get people very angry about me about that.
My Twitter is at WeirdingtonE, and a lot of the times it's about just wacky random stuff and game design, but periodically it explodes into just relentlessly angry hyper-politics. I've been on a snake watch bent for a little while.
Yeah,
I just really like snakes.
Just really like snakes.
I don't
snakes.
Know what has to politics, but just snakes really really fascinating subject to me recently.
You can write to us at WeirdingtonESQ right at gmail .com. My instinct is always to say .ca because I'm from Canada, so that's why I had stumbled over that. You can donate to Weirdington's Ko-Fi page. We'll be setting up a Patreon. I keep saying that, and then I keep forgetting to yell at Weird to do that. So that's my bad.
And he does have to.
Yeah.
actually, wait a minute. You guys can help that out. You can, like, at least yell at me to do it.
Yeah. Because we got to get started on that so that Weird can continue to eat food and not die. And you'll get bonus content out of it. We'll do reviews of stuff related to this. Maybe tackle some other things within it. Maybe do short reviews.
Oh, shit. Wait a minute. One David S. Just sent us an email at 1:21 today. And we'll get to know it next week.
we'll do
so,
an actual
David
mail.
S., look forward to that.
Wow.
Oh, wait. No, it's somebody else. Alyssa K.
Okay.
Alyssa K., look forward to mailbag next week.
Yeah, we'll actually get to two of those for once. And you can send your emails again at WeiringtonESQ at gmail.com, and we'll read your emails out on the pod, and we'll discuss what we got wrong or clarify things. I know everything about this fucking setting, so I can clear up a lot of shit, by the way. If you're having a lot of confusions about, like, weirder stuff that we just don't have time to talk about in the podcast, I know this whole fucking setting by the back of my hand, or the cleft of my hoof, you might say. By the way, do you want to play us out then, Weird?
I mean, all that said, for as good as it was this week, that it just means the slide down is going to be all the much worse. Oh no, Fi, I think this might have all been a terrible mistake.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.